Brendan was very keen. I came and talked about this because he said there's quite a lot of creative writing goes on in the faculty, and I've met one of your colleagues who says she writes a haiku a day, so I'll be very interested to hear what you think about this. If poetry or haiku poetry or that is not your thing, then I apologise. And we'll discover why the little frog's jumping into the water in a minute or so. You probably know already. So haiku poetry is something I got into about 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, and I came into it by... Do you remember a shop called James Thins, which was on the...
Yes,
James Thins, which is now Blackwell's. And in James Thins, I walked into the door, and on a little table where they used to have a table as you went in with books, it's not there anymore, there was a little black book, tiny little book, called the Haiku 100. And I had no idea what haiku were, I'd never heard of them. And this book cost a couple of pounds or something like that. It's still available on Amazon. It's quite pricey now because it's quite rare. But there are some cheaper versions around on various websites. Worth getting. I picked up this book, and it's got 100 haiku in it. And I read it, and I was absolutely fascinated. This is fun, you know, and it's moving, and I fancy having a go at that. And I did, but I didn't do very well. And I kept reading them out to my wife, and she said, yeah, you're really interested in this. And she bought me another book of haiku when we moved to Hull just after that. And I read that. Again, I carried on trying to write some haiku poetry. Dreadful stuff it was, and I'm glad none of it exists today. And then I've always maintained a sort of interest in it, but I didn't really write anymore for quite a long time. And maybe 5 years ago, something like that, I was on a plane going into China, and I read about a haiku competition that Japanese Airlines run. It was in the airline magazine. It wasn't Japanese airline plane, but happened to... That's a haiku competition. I had no idea such things existed. And it just triggered off again. Oh, I must get those books out again, have a look at them. So I did, and since then I've been learning more, writing regularly, writing with buddies. And I went back to the Haiku 100, discovered it was published by something called the British Haiku Society. So I thought, I wonder if they still exist. They do. So now I'm a member of that. And there's various haiku societies around the world. There's a haiku group here in Edinburgh, which I was in touch with when I came up. So it's quite a community. And to me, haiku is fun. It's got its roots in Zen Buddhism. I'm not a Buddhist. But I think in some ways it can be almost a spiritual, in-the-moment exercise. I don't want to make too much of that, because mainly it's fun. And, you know, I've had some success in getting some published, which is how Brendan had come to Brendan's attention. So I'll share some of my own work with you and some of the work of other people. And I don't want to get too technical, but I'll go through, you know, what a haiku actually is and may dispel some notions about haiku, you know. So what's a haiku? Here's one that I wrote quickly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now I will count to 7. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You know, 5, 7, 5 syllables, which is what really everybody thinks is haiku. And I have to write up front, dispel that notion. That isn't, and I'll tell you why that isn't what haiku is about. That isn't a haiku anyway, it's just doggerel. But I just thought, some, you know, you go down to, in fact, in what used to be James Thins, Blackwell's, there are books of haiku in there, some better than others. And some are just 5, 7, 5 sayings, basically. They're not really haiku. I'm not disrespecting these people or mocking people at all. But, you know, haiku is something quite different, something quite specific. And it's related to other short forms of poetry, which you can begin to sort of, you know, explore through it. It's Japanese in origin. But the Catalonians have got three-line poetry, the Burmese have got three-line poetry. You know, it's not unique in having short-form poetry, but it's got a unique something about it that say that I try and explain. This is the first ever haiku. I'll come back and we'll decide why that, or explain to you why that is a haiku in a minute. Matsu Basho lived in the 1600s. He was a mendicant Buddhist monk in Japan, and that was the first ever haiku, or various versions of this one exist. An old pond, a frog jumps, the sound of water. Some people say an old pond, a frog jumps, splash. But that was the first recognised as a haiku. And it developed from something called a hoku, which started a renga. And rengas were where Japanese poets sat around, and the master would give a three-line poem, and then they had to go round in a circle and all follow it up in that theme, and build up what's called a Ringer, a big poem of a certain length. I can't remember how many stanzas, and then we used to publish these. And a great deal of sake was drunk in the meantime, so that towards the end of the poems they got more and more zany and funny and crazy, you know. So haiku, you know, that's recognised as the first ever haiku, although Basho himself never called it a haiku. That's a haiku. That's the most famous one-word haiku in the world by Cor van den Hovel, Tundra. It appeared in a book of his poetry, which on a blank page, just one word, Tundra, in the midst of lots and lots of other haiku. And it's recognised as being a one-word haiku. Others have tried to emulate it with different words, but it's never quite met that shock of turning the page and seeing one word. So haiku doesn't have to be three lines. It can be any number of lines, but generally not too long. And I say that's, even on Wikipedia, that's recognised as the most famous one-word haiku. Cor van den Hovel is still with us and still writing haiku. The frog, by the way, is in honour of Basho's frog jumping into the water. It maybe get irritating after a while. It's on all the slides. So what makes this a haiku? And again, this is as technical as I'm going to get. Explain what haiku are, and then the related forms of poetry, which are recognised as haiku. This is a haiku because it's got a season word, or a kigo, and frog in Japanese is a season word. It indicates spring. So a true haiku will have a seasonal reference in it. Spring, summer, autumn, or winter, or in Japanese there were more seasons than that. Something that indicates where you are in the year. You know, you can, a rainy, windy day. Try to summarise what's going on out there in a haiku and tell people what time of year it is. So that's one of the most defining things about a haiku, is kigo. Then it will have a kareji, which is a cutting word. So haiku, despite being three lines, should be divided into a sort of slight anticipation. An old pond, a frog jumps, what, into the sound of water. So those are the two things, very simply, that make a haiku. So that's what makes a haiku. A season word and a cutting word. But, as I say, obviously there are very different forms of haiku. That's Basho, 1644 to 1694, he didn't live very long. Issa and Busan were the masters that followed after him, very much in his footsteps. I think Issa would have met Basho, Busan, Hardens, and there's a whole line of haiku masters after that, but Basho is recognised as the master. And he wrote a very famous book called The Narrow Road to the Deep North, The Narrow Road to the Far North and the Deep North, which follows a journey on which he wrote haiku all the way through the journey, describing where he was. So if you want to know a bit of the history, you can look into these people. Basho never wrote haiku, but he's recognised as a haiku poet. Issa writes very funny, very sympathetic to the animal kingdom. You can't kill a louse and things like that. Very, very, very entertaining haiku. Busan, a bit more formal. Okay, now, but this is actually how haiku were written by the Japanese. This is by Busan. In the old pond, a sunken sandal, falling sleet. It's got a seasonal reference and a cutting word. But they were written in a line. And it was 5-7-5, got a rhythm to it. But most people assume that it's got to be 5-7-5, and it doesn't have to be 5-7-5. 5-7-5 refers to the Japanese sounds. They're not syllables, they're sounds. It's different from our syllables, which join things together. So if we can get away from the 5-7-5 idea, I found it very, very liberating. So we've created this three-line haiku business. Okay, so Brendan was quite keen that maybe you'd learn a bit about haiku, maybe want to do a bit yourself and have some fun with it. We won't have time to do any writing today, but really, haiku sometimes is interpreted as high, fun, verse. Ku definitely means verse. And in the haiku world, we talk about kus. So it's actually got as few rules as possible. Those things about the seasons and the kigo, they're not really rules, they're what defines a haiku, but it's free of rhyme. They don't rhyme, but they can rhyme. They're free of metaphors and similes, onomatopoeia, alliteration, adjectives, adverbs, personifications. But we can use these things, but long-form poetry often strives to get these things in. And I love long form poetry. You know, this is the night train crossing the border, bringing the cheque in the postal lorry. You know, the train going up to Scotland, that kind of thing by W.H. Auden. It can be used cleverly in haiku, but doesn't have to be. So you don't have to sit there thinking, I've got to try and make this look smart or clever. It's more what comes to you at the moment. So the purpose of haiku is really to capture a moment. So haiku don't have cause and effect in them. You know, this happened and then that happened, or if this happens, that will. It's just a moment. That's the Zen aspect of it. It's absolutely just what happened in an instant, and it should capture that instant, and it should convey that to somebody who reads it. And some people get them, some people don't. But it should be capturing a moment. It should be concise, and they should always. Haiku in a related form called senru, which I'll come to, which is, I'll give you some examples, very similar to haiku. They should amuse, they should amaze. People say, wow, you know, how did somebody come up with that idea? And it's very good to try and show rather than to tell. Don't get too many details in. Try and allude to things, and I'll again show you some examples. And I'll read some examples later. I'm going to put some up on here, and I'm going to read some towards the end. There's no rules about the syllables, but there are generally fewer than 17 syllables, but there's no hard and fast rules about that, but you would normally make them longer than that. That's more of an observation, really, than a rule. There are no hard and fast rules. So I'm going to show you some examples now, I think. I should have printed this out. There are different types of short form poetry, all Japanese and in origin, Tanshi, 1 to 6 line poetry, Gogyoshi, 5 line freestyle poetry, Go is 5 in Japanese, and Tanka, which you may have heard of, are 5 lines, but they're structured with 3 and 2. They're a little bit like haiku. Haiku, as I've said already, 1 to 3 lines with a seasonal reference, and the kareji, the cutting word, and senru, which are almost indistinguishable from haiku, but they're about human foibles. And as you'll see, most of what I'm going to present are probably senru rather than haiku. Now, it's wrong to say there's no distinction between haiku and senru. I've got in trouble for saying that once, but you can get awful trouble with the haiku community if you get things wrong. But they're presented together in haiku journals. They're never separated out because there's a lot of overlap between them. So I get a feeling that haiku journal editors are, you know, they're hedging their bets a bit on that one. But they're very similar, but not exactly the same. So, I'm going to show you, where there's no author, these are my own haiku, and I'll call them haiku. And that was the first one that I ever got published, Watch Hands, with no fingers, pointed to time. I've got no idea what that means, but it just came to me. And an editor liked it, and he published it. You know? And I thought I knew what it meant at the time. And I look at it more now, and I think, actually, I don't know what that means. But, you know, watch hands, there's no fingers, pointing the time. I thought I was being very clever, you know, so did an editor. So that was the first one I got published. But it's neither really a haiku nor a senru. And I'm very, very pleased with that one. It's marked me as my first ever published haiku about two or three years ago. This is the next one I published. Now, that's very definitely a haiku, because it's got the ploughman. Somebody's ploughing the fields. We know the time of the year when we plough the fields, after all the crops are in. The ploughman, his thoughts mingle, what with the gulls. You know, you see the plough going along, the gulls are up there. I just thought the ploughman, his thoughts were flying around over his head. I saw that. I was driving up to Scotland once, and, oh, there's a ploughman, you know, and, you know, didn't, you know, actually saw that. You don't have to have seen, you can make stuff up in haiku, nobody knows, but I did actually see that. I thought that would make a perfect haiku. It took a while to craft it and get it down to that. That's definitely a haiku. That's the second one I got published. Silent Shredder, Graveyard of All My Thoughts. This one actually got me, within my first year of serious haiku writing, an honourable mention in the Vladimir Devidi Haiku Award in Japan. I was astonished. You know, they have a first prize, a second prize, and then a bunch of honourable mentions, and then some interesting ones. Thousands of, sorry, I'm bigging myself up, thousands of submissions. There's thousands of haiku poets around the world, and I got an honourable mention, I was quite pleased. That's one of my two-line haiku, dry season, only one moon. So, you know, when there's no water in the dry season, it's a haiku. Let's say we're in Africa or wherever, or Far East or whatever. there's no moon reflected. You know, I thought the fact that it was two line and not a third line kind of emphasised the fact that nothing was reflected there. So it didn't have a third line to sort of complete it. But again, these have all been published one way or another. Okay, so the devices you can use in haiku are many. Seasons, I've already said. Cutting words. Even senru should really have a cutting word to sort of define where it begins, where the first set of ideas and the second set of ideas. We can use juxtaposition of ideas. We can use two very opposite ideas. We can use humour, ambiguity, try and leave somebody wondering what on earth you're talking about. You'll see some examples of that in a minute. Synesthesia is very good. I have actually been naughty enough to set out to deliberately try and write synesthetic haiku where you go from one sense to another. I'll show you one example of that so you can tie in sound with vision and smell with... I'm not going to give you any examples of erotic haiku, I don't think. But there are lots of you can use eroticism in haiku. It works very well. If you get the Penguin Book of Haiku, it's full of erotic haiku. Some of them are delightful. And I think of current haiku writers, I think females write erotic haiku much better than men. And also weirdness in haiku. There's a website called Weird Laburnum. Have a look at it. Some of those things are crazy. Alan Summers is a famous... One of the few professional haiku writers in the world, which is living from writing haiku and teaching haiku. He writes in there all the time. I have to say to Alan, I don't actually know what you meant there, you know. And I've got one example of one of my own weird haiku as well. So almost anything can be a haiku. I find it very affirming, a spiritual sort of experience. It's very satisfying to have an idea, to get it crafted down, and especially to get it published. I think it's a little bit like academic writing. I think we can write it for our own amusement. Most of my haiku are written for my own amusement on my blog, but trying to get things published means that it's gone through a process. Somebody else has had a look at it. Somebody else agrees that it's worth the world seeing. So here's some other people's. Ren, I love this one.
Wouldn't say you didn't know it,
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I'm straight into the erotic. What are you seeing there?
Please.
Eroticism is the eye of the beholder. Yeah, I love this one. Red bra online, a blue tit in each cup. I mean, it's got a double meaning, obviously. Donald Dempsey, he's a very, very good member of the London Haiku Group, a very good haiku writer. That's published. Claire Chatelet, also from the London Haiku Group. Retired at last, the freedom to enjoy my aches and pains. That's a senru. There could have two more different ideas, but it just captures something that's gone through someone's head at the time. I have to say that ageing, death, illness are big features in haiku. And I'm going to read some from a book on ageing haiku, not my own, but someone else's in a minute. But they feature a lot, and there's been a huge anthology published recently, which I feature in, on ageing, haiku about ageing. It's very good, and if I can remember the name, I'll tell you what it is. That's my problem at 64, I can't remember anything. I like this one, planetarium, my child's grasp starts to loosen. You just see it, don't you, the kid. You know, I know of my own kids, you go and you see something at the zoo, and they let go. And it's just, and it also indicates the child growing up, so it's got a double meaning. Hi, Brendan. Okay, by John McManus. This is my very good friend, Su Wei Hui, who will not forgive me for putting this. Is not a published haiku. I've told her she must get this published, but I've co-authored a little book with Sue. She's Burmese. One of the brightest stars on the planet, I think. She's a nurse who works in Australia now, but walking with Dad, he farts very loud, all eyes on me. That's typical of her humour, you know? Typical of her humour. We're past the erotic ones, Brandon, so... this is my own attempt at synesthesia. It's published, but at the crack of broken twigs, the smell of sap, so the sound and the smell. You know, you're walking through a wood crack and you smell that smell. So it conjures up a split second. a haiku should take a breath to say 6 seconds at most, but it's the fact that it's something that's happened instantly, you've recorded it, and then you've crafted it to get it down to something. I also write a lot of haiku which have a shape, so I like the way that goes down, simply because fewer letters in the other world. That's one of the things you can use as well. Many people do all sorts of devices in haiku. This is one of my weird haiku, which is published in Weird Laburnum. The soup arrives, Buddha jumps over the wall. What the hell does that mean? Well, Buddha jumps over the wall is a soup in Taiwan. It's a meat soup, which is so good that the Taiwanese say Buddha, the vegetarians in the garden next door who smells the soup, he jumps over the wall. So I was at a dinner in Taiwan and the soup arrived and a woman said, "Ah, Buddha jumps over the wall." And I said, "What did you say?" "This is the name of the soup." And she explained the story to me. I thought, right, that's a haiku. You can do funny things with letters. This is not one of mine. Stuck to the slab, the eye of the frozen fish. The eye's stuck up there. So people do all sorts of clever things with haiku. And the problem with these things, they're so clever, you want to do them, and then you think, well, I'm just copying people. Here's something, Andrew Schimmel, who's in the London Haiku Group. See what he's done there? With a lozenge? Water tumbling over the weir, blossom tumbling over the old stone well. Or you can do water blossom tumbling, you know, you can make up haiku from it, but you can. Some people write them one way and they can be read the other way. So all sorts of devices and clever things. So haiku's gone way beyond this, what we think they are. He is an outstanding haiku poet, Andrew. I've even written a haiku about him, which I can't remember. The haiku poet walks past, I saw him in a coffee shop once. And I couldn't remember. Now this is, I think, the foremost haiku poet in the world at the moment is Jim Cation. He's a former professional tennis player in America. Sorry, it's a little bit faint. I didn't want to try and emulate them myself, so I wrote to Jim to say, could I use these? And he sent me these. And he's got a haiku book called From Light to Shade. And they're not all like this, but he uses a different font. In heavy fog, light as a particle and wave. So he's got everything. He's got it appearing out. They can see it appearing out of the fog. He's got quantum physics in there. I mean, these guys' minds are just incredible, you know? I could never think of that. Why is this not doing it everywhere? Somewhere becoming rain, becoming somewhere. You're just having this very, very clever. And he's got a few, he intersperses his other haiku with these shading. And I've always wanted to do this, but I would just be derivative. But there's nothing you can't do. Brendan doesn't know why the frog's jumping in there, does he? Okay, selected haiku. I'm going to read some haiku now, if you don't mind. Haiku can be seen, they can also be read. And I'm going to read from Dewdrops, I'm just going to read a couple from each, by myself and Siwei Lai. Senior Admission by Bill Kenny, which is haiku about aging, which is a big feature. And from a really good friend of mine, Erwin Castaldi in New Jersey, Evensong and The Great Egg. Just to give you some examples of the sort of things that people do publish, the books are all here. This is for sale. Okay, this is one of Su Wei's, which I love. Chimes of Cathedral, I read the words of silent beggars. It conjures up images. It doesn't mean anything, but I immediately could see a beggar sitting outside a cathedral. Is the beggar writing something? They don't really benefit from too much explanation, to be honest. Haiku's got this thing about being in the mind of the writer and the mind of the reader or the listener, with no necessary connection between. The haiku poet says something, the reader can make what they want of. Another of Su Wei's, which is more obvious, but it's a haiku, The Fall, turning into yellow, silent sacrifices. Autumn, the leaves coming down. Very obvious, but lovely. These haiku selected for this book were all published. We made sure that we only had ones that had been through some sort of process. This is one of mine that was published in the Mainichi newspaper in Japan. Cherry Blossom Shower, the pigeon changing trees. Sitting in my garden, the pigeon goes from one, we got two cherry trees and the blossom came down. That's obviously a haiku, it's got a seasonal reference. Cherry blossom's a big thing in haiku, for the cherry blossom viewing in Kyoto, but also because cherry blossom indicates impermanence, you know, beauty and then death. It was the symbol of the kamikaze, another of Sue's which I love, and this is a senryu. After night duty, breakfast flavoured with gossip, which is a nurse. That's a senryu, which has not got a seasonal reference. Bill Kenny, senior admissions. This is mostly about ageing, but there are some absolutely cracking other haiku here. Morning workout, my nose running faster than I am. High school yearbook, I wonder what I would think of me. I have to say, when you get to my age and you're on all these school reunions, websites and Facebook, that one really, really dings a bell. Here's a slightly erotic one. My married friend under the mistletoe, her lips part. At that time, sometimes you think, what happened there? Yeah. And here's one that I just love. Same-sex wedding. His father gave him away years ago. And my really good friend Erin Castaldi's book, which I've reviewed, it's just been reviewed in Frog Pond by me, which is the Journal of the Haiku Society of America. Even sort of the Great Egg is a river, in the Great Egg Harbour River in New Jersey. She walks along the river and writes haiku. Spider's Dance makes and remakes a lonely home. Double meaning there, I think it's the spider's lonely, but the house is deserted because if it wasn't, there wouldn't be a spider's web. Soaring at a snail's pace, silent hawk. You know, as I say, they don't bear explanation, but I can't help it. You know, you see a bird in the distance, you know it's going fast, but it's actually going slow. That to me is like Noel Gallagher's slowly walking down the hall faster than a cannonball. You know that line from, that's one of the, So Sad I Could Be, don't look back in anger. You just think, why is that? That's the stupidest line in the world, but actually it's a brilliant line. You know, his was probably not inspired by haiku, probably inspired by something else. Tornado of gnats redirect the sparrow's flight. You know, you get the birds moving, just moving that way. Just instant things. And finally, thunder showers and a trash can lid. Splashing cardinals, the red birds in the east coast of America. So, people publish these books, and some of them worth getting. Another thing, just to finish off, another tradition is death haiku. I've got a whole book of Japanese death poetry. Not all haiku, but this is something that all good haiku poets have their death haiku. Either ready, you know, on the deathbed, writing it on the deathbed, or the last one they wrote is considered to be their death haiku. So you've got to be careful that red bra on the line of blue tip in each cup isn't your last one. So Basho's was, on a journey ill, my green goes wandering over withered fields. He was lying, dying. His disciples were around him, and his colleague monks were around him. He died. He died a few days after writing that. And the haiku in the book of Basho, which I've got, lead up to this. You know, he's gradually getting more and more frail. This is going to be mine. Beneath the headstone, Conversations Unfinished. Published that in the Pulses, American medical creative writing page. But I think I'll make that one mine unless I come up with a better one. Signature haiku. This is me finished here. Okay, another device that haiku poets use, and this is now published in a book, it's going to be published in a book of secret haikus. Try to think which haiku actually defines you, what really tells people something about yourself. And this is mine, and somebody anonymously at the Irish Writers Centre a couple of years ago translated it into Irish. Can you read that? Because the Beltane is... Sorry, I'll read the haiku first. Made you mud on my mother's hands. It's a old Scottish tradition of washing your face in the made you. And I'll never forget my mother doing this with me in the garden, but there were the worm casts were there, and she did that, and she got mud on her face, and I'll never forget it. Mum died a couple of years ago, and I just think, you know, for somebody that just connects me to my family, and the Beltane is the festival. So I'm really proud. Since yesterday, being an Irishman, just an Irish citizen, I've got an Irish haiku. So that's I think I describe that as my signature haiku. It's going to be published soon. Okay. Finished there, look at that, bang on time. Here's my final haiku. A haiku poet will always try to sell you a book. Dewdrops, available, Amazon Kindle. I wouldn't buy the Amazon Kindle version, that's for the States, because that's too expensive to pay. If you want a copy, email me and I'll send you a copy for a few quid or something like that. But say if you want a copy. Brendan's got a copy. You can have a look at it if you want. Thank you very, very much.
Roger, thank you so much for doing the workshop. I know I wasn't here, but I get a sense it was pretty good.
It was all...
So I really appreciate you coming. And hope you come back.
Yeah, okay, thanks, yes. There's a haiku poet sitting next to you as well.
I'm not convinced I do.